केशस्तस्य देहोयम् स्ताविस्तस्य स्तवीयशाम् यत्रेदं व्यजते विश्वम् भूतं भव्यं भवच्च सत् विशेषस्तस्य देहोयम् स्तविस्तश्च स्तवीयशम् यत्रेदं व्यजते विश्वम् भूतं भव्यं भवच्च सत् विशेषस्तस्य देहोयम् स्तवितश्च स्तवीयशाम् यत्रेदं व्यजते विश्वम् भूतभव्यं भवच्च सत् विशेषतस्य देहोयम् विशेषतस्य देहोयम् विश्वस्तदीयशाम् यजेदं व्यजते विश्वम् भूतं भव्यं भवच स माताजी विशेषतस्य देहोयम् सविस्तस्य स्तवीयशाम् यत्रेदं व्यजते विश्वम् भूतं भव्यं भवच विशेषः पर्सनल् तस्य हिस् देह बॉडी अयम् दिस् स्तविस्थ ग्रॉसली मटेरियल च एंड स्तवीयशाम ऑफ ऑल मैटर यत्र वेरिन इदम् ऑल दीज फिनोमेना व्यजते इज एक्सपीरियंस्ड विश्वम यूनिवर्स भूतम पास्ट भव्यम फ्यूचर भवत प्रेजेंट च एंड सत रिजल्टेंट ट्रांसलेशन दिस जाइजेंटिक मैनिफेस्टेशन ऑफ द फिनोमिनल मटेरियल वर्ल्ड as a whole, is the personal body of the Absolute Truth, wherein the universal resultant past, present and future of material time is experienced. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Anything, either material or spiritual, is but an expansion of the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as stated in the Bhagavad Gita 13.13, the omnipotent Lord has his transcendental eyes, heads, and other bodily parts distributed everywhere. He can see, hear, touch, or manifest himself anywhere and everywhere. For he is present everywhere as the supersoul of all infinitesimal souls. Although he has his particular abode in the absolute world, the relative world is also his phenomenal representation, because it is nothing but an expansion of his transcendental energy. Although he is in his abode, his energy is distributed everywhere. Just as the sun is localized as well as expanded everywhere, since the rays of the sun, being non-different from the sun, are accepted as expansions of the sun disk. In the Vishnu Puran 1.22.52, it is said that as fire expands its rays and heat from one place, similarly, the Supreme Spirit, the personality of Godhead, expands himself by his manifold energy everywhere and anywhere. The phenomenal manifestation of the gigantic universe is only a part of his Virat body. Less intelligent men cannot conceive of the transcendental, all-spiritual form of the Lord. But they are astounded by his different energies. Just as the aborigines are struck with wonder by the manifestation of lightning, a gigantic mountain, or a hugely expanded banyan tree. The aborigines praise the strength of the tiger and the elephant because of their superior energy and strength. The asuras cannot recognize the existence of the Lord, although there are vivid descriptions of the Lord in the revealed scriptures. Although the Lord incarnates and exhibits his uncommon strength and energy, and although he is accepted as the Supreme Personality of Godhead by learned scholars and saints like Vyasadeva, Narada, Asita and Devala in the past, and by Arjun in the Bhagavad Gita, as also by the Acharyas like Shankara, Ramanuja, Madhva and Lord Sri Chaitanya in the modern age. The Asuras do not accept any evidential proof from the revealed scriptures, nor do they recognize the authority of the great Acharyas. They want to see with their own eyes at once. Therefore, they can see the gigantic body of the Lord as Virata, which will answer their challenge, and since they are accustomed to paying homage to superior material strength, like that of a tiger, elephant and lightning, they can offer respect to the Virat Rupa. Lord Krishna, by the request of Arjuna, exhibited his Virat form for the Asuras. A pure devotee of the Lord, being unaccustomed to looking into such a mundane gigantic form of the Lord, requires special vision for the purpose. The Lord therefore favored Arjuna with special vision for looking into his Virat Rupa, which is described in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. The Virat Rupa of the Lord was especially manifested not for the benefit of Arjuna, but for the unintelligent class of men who accept anyone and everyone as an incarnation of the Lord and so mislead the general mass of people. For them, the indication is that one should ask the chief incarnation to exhibit his Virat Rupa and thus be established as an incarnation. The Virat Rupa manifestation of the Lord is simultaneously a challenge to the atheist and a favor to the Asuras, who can think of the Lord as Virata and thus gradually cleanse the dirty things from their heart in order to become qualified to actually see the transcendental form of the Lord in the near future. This is a favor of the all-merciful Lord to the atheists and the gross materialists. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Taha Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsa Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatam Vitamtam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamsya He Krishna Karuna Sindhu
Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Namami Hari Priye Pancha Kalpataru Vyascha Kripasindu Vyevacha Pajitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivastadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Hare Krishna. I'd like to welcome all of you to today's Srimad Bhagavatam class. We are on the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is one of the complicated sections of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the reason this section of Srimad Bhagavatam is like this is on purpose. Shukadeva Goswami, while narrating Srimad Bhagavatam to Parikshit Maharaj, he knows that the Bhagavatam will be read, heard, by many, many people in the future. And because he knows that the Bhagavatam will be read sometimes even by those who are atheists, those who are not so having faith in Krishna, so Shukadeva Goswami has created the Bhagavatam in such a way that at different points of the Bhagavatam, he puts checks for going ahead in the journey of Srimad Bhagavatam. What kind of checks does Shukadeva Goswami put? I call these as checks of faith. At every point in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there will be information, there will be stories, there will be things put by Shukadeva Goswami which simply tests your faith. The second canto, the fifth canto, and the ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam are like small checks. They are like, you can say, gateways. And many, many people, when they read the Srimad Bhagavatam, they get stuck in these three points. I don't know how many of you all have read the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, but for those who have begun the journey of reading Bhagavatam, you will understand this. The first canto of Bhagavatam is very easy to read. You read it like a breeze. When you reach the second canto, that's where you get stuck. Many, many people I know don't go beyond the second canto. They kind of start reading second canto. At some point, they get so confused, so bewildered, so unsure whether they want to continue, they stop. And somehow, by mistake, if you continue reading second canto and reach fifth canto, again, there is another big check there. You know, second canto has descriptions of creation, very complicated descriptions of creation. I don't know, I just read some things, the whole purport and the translation. I don't know if any of you understood anything from what I read, you know. It's a little complex, you know, it's a little confusing, it's a little not really understandable by human intelligence. Now, you might be thinking, is Prabhupada doing some kind of word jugglery by writing these purports here? You know, look at this. This gigantic manifestation of the phenomenal material world as a whole is the personal body of the Absolute Truth, wherein the universal resultant, past, present and future of the material time is experienced. What does it even mean? You know, for a lot of people, it is not really, intelligible to understand, basically. Or, you know, I'm just reading another small paragraph from the purport over here, you know. The phenomenal manifestation of the gigantic universe is only a part of his Virat Roop. Less intelligent men cannot conceive of the transcendental, all-spiritual form of the Lord. But they are astounded by his different energies. Just as the aborigines are struck with wonder by the manifestation of lightning a gigantic mountain and a hugely spaced banyan tree. The aborigines praised the strength of the tiger and elephant because of their superior energy and strength. Now Prabhupada is talking about the whole universe, and then he's talking about aborigines who are not able to relate to the Virat Rupa. So now for us as human beings who are normal people living in the material world, to imagine something so complicated as a Virat Rupa, something so complicated as the universal form of the Lord, it's not easy at all. And therefore Prabhupada is reducing it to a level at which we can understand. He's talking about, you know, looking at phenomena like lightning and thunder and, you know, things like that. So, the second canto is a big, complicated mess. And the fifth canto is even more complex. This description of Jambudvip there. There's so many complicated stories over there about creation again, which are not easy for, you know, normal human beings to understand and conceive. And somehow, if you manage to cross the fifth canto also, then you get stuck in ninth canto. Ninth canto has such stories that can bewilder anybody. Ninth canto has such stories that can shock anybody. Impossible to imagine stories. There is a sage who is sitting in, you know, who is meditating underground, and only his two eyes are seen from the soil. And, you know, there's one lady who looks at these two eyes which seem to be shining on the ground. And she pokes the eyes with some thorn or something like that. And the eyes start bleeding and the sage becomes blind. Now, what can you make out of this? How do you understand that somebody is inside the ground, you know, and meditating with his eyes open like that? And only the eyeballs are outside, you know. Bewildering story, isn't it? Like this, there are so many stories in the ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. One more, you know, eccentric than the other, you know. And somehow or the other, if you manage to pass the ninth canto, then you get access to the tenth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So these three cantos, the second, fifth, the ninth canto, are purposely put in by Shukadeva Goswami to stop us from reaching the tenth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, so that only the people who are absolutely faithful, if you can believe what is written in the second canto of Bhagavatam, you are qualified to go and reach up to the fifth canto. If you believe what is there in the fifth canto of Bhagavatam, you are qualified to reach up to the ninth canto. And if you believe in what is there in the ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, then you can go ahead and reach the tenth canto, which has Krishna's sweetest pastimes. Now, Krishna's sweetest pastimes are very much relatable. They very much, we can connect with them. But if you don't understand Krishna's greatness and you directly go to Krishna's sweetness, you will misunderstand him as an ordinary boy. You will misunderstand him as an ordinary human being. And that is not the correct understanding of Krishna. So Shukadeva Goswami spends nine cantos establishing the greatness of the Lord. And then he establishes the sweetness of the Lord. So that is the sequence of the way in which the Bhagavatam is written. So now, for us to be able to analyze something as complicated as the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, I want to make it a little simple and a little digestible. And I'm going to focus on some very important aspects of why our scriptures are written like this. And why our scriptures, why we need acharyas, why we need good teachers to be able to teach us scriptures in the way that we can understand it. Srila Prabhupada, now if you read the Srimad Bhagavatam without the translation and purport of Srila Prabhupada, you will understand nothing. Absolutely nothing. I don't think any of us sitting here would ever understand the Bhagavad Gita without the purports of Srila Prabhupada, without the clarification that Prabhupada provides in the Bhaktivedanta purports. Therefore, these acharyas, they are such amazing geniuses. They know everything, but they present it at our level. So, that's the discussion that we're going to have today, you know, we're going to see how we can really appreciate the work of our acharyas and also our scriptures in a way that is relevant to all of us in our lives. So, this section that we're reading of the Srimad Bhagavatam talks about the phenomenal universe, the material world, which is a manifestation of Krishna only. Krishna manifests in this material world in so many ways. And one of the ways in which he manifests in the material world, one of the most amazing ways in which he manifests in the material world, is in the form of deities. So we have some very amazing deities across the world, especially in the land of India, that are manifestations of different forms of material forms of the Lord. For example, just to give you an example, how Krishna uses elements to manifest in this world. For example, if you go to the north, there is a place known as Muktinath. And in Muktinath, the Lord manifests in the form of a stone. You know, Shaligram Shilas. These are stones. But each and every one of those stones, they are the Lord. Now, all of us go to beaches or go to riverbeds and all that. You find so many stones, isn't it? Now, can you pick up any stone and say, this is God? No, obviously not. But in Muktinath, if you go there and there's a river named Gandaki River, there are hundreds of Shaligram Shilas there. Pick up any one of them, it is God. It is the Lord. So it's not that, you know, you have to do some pran pratishtha or something like that and then you can, you know, it becomes the Lord manifests there. No. Each and every one of those stones that manifests there is the Lord himself. Then the Lord manifests as wood in Jagannath, Daru Brahman. So now that wood, Daru Brahman, is not an ordinary wood. The wood that is selected to make Jagannath in Jagannath Puri is not a wood that, you know, that is created by any human being. It is a wood that is very specifically chosen by the Lord. And that wood also comes in the dream of the pujari, saying that I am the Lord, basically. So now imagine, you know, we see wood all over the world. But this is a special type of wood. The Lord is manifesting in this wood. Or there is another, you know, form of the Lord in Srirangam. He is made up of some very phenomenal material called Sudha Bimbam. Now, Sudha Bimbam is not normal material that you get in the material world. It is a combination of many herbs, many elements of the material world, and then combined together, it forms this beautiful deity in Srirangam. Then, to make it even more interesting, the Lord manifests in Pushkar in the form of water. The lake, the water in Pushkar is the Lord. Now usually you go to a temple and then you worship the Lord, right? But here in Pushkar, the water is the Lord. You will not find any deity over there of the Lord, but the water itself is God. And then you go to Naimisharanya. There is no deity in Naimisharanya as such. The forest itself is God. The entire forest of Naimisharanya is Krishna. Now, if we just go to these holy places that we just spoke about, in each and every one of these holy places, you will find the Lord manifesting in his Virat Roop in one sense, you know. The Virat Roop of the Lord is so powerful that it is, in any element, you can find the Lord's presence if you want to, if you choose to. And that's why this particular aspect of material, of creation, is so important, and especially if you study the Bhagavad Gita, there are two chapters, 10th chapter and the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna is specifically talking about how you can see him in ordinary things of this world. Now, why does Krishna spend two full chapters to convince us that you can see him everywhere? Because people like us can't see him even in the deity. The people like us, we can't even see God in the deity. What to speak of seeing God everywhere? So Krishna is specifically give us examples of how you can find him everywhere. So we are going to be studying now some ways in which we can look at the Lord manifesting around us. And also we are going to be studying about how the great acharyas have helped us get access to these very, very complicated teachings and made it so simple for us who are a part of the material world, who may not have so much of understanding spiritually, to be able to absorb it. Innovation is a key of life, right? Every one of us, we are a part of a world where there is constant innovation happening. And some of the biggest companies in the world, whether it is Microsoft or Google or Amazon or Apple or any of these companies, they are so powerful because they innovate. And if they don't innovate, they're lost, isn't it? Where is BlackBerry today? Most of the youngsters, teenagers today don't even know that there was a company existing called BlackBerry, isn't it? Because it doesn't exist anymore, literally. Why? They just stopped innovating. So, innovation is very much necessary in this material world to sustain. If the same product is in the market for 2 or 3 years, it becomes irrelevant after that. Nobody wants to buy it, Simply because today people get bored very easily. So if you have the same movie, similar type of movie coming, nobody will watch it. If you wear the same type of clothes after a period of time, you get bored of it. If you wear the same type of specs after a period of time, you get bored of it. You use the same type of car or phone, you get bored of it, So there is so much boredom today. So people have to, keep changing, innovating again and again and again. Or, for example, even in our own homes, the way we keep things, like for example, there is a flower vase that is kept in one particular section of the home for like 5 years. And then you start wondering, why, can I change it somewhere else, Can I change the position of the sofa somewhere else? So even in our own homes, we keep changing things. Why? The whole world is revolving around change, something new. Then, how is it that the Vedas, which are thousands and thousands of years old, are still the same? No change at all. No innovation at all. How is it that the Vedas that have been here for thousands of years, there is no change in it at all. They don't undergo any change. Not a single syllable has been changed in the Vedas for thousands and thousands of years. So now the question is, in a world of boredom, in a world of change, in a world of innovation, how do the Vedas remain relevant today? The reason is that the Vedas don't invent, they just adopt. And so they adapt to the new ways of life, basically. So the Vedas are time immemorial. They are called as Anadi Nitya. So they are eternal and they are Anadi, they are timeless. They are not written and created by any individual. There is no date mentioned in the Vedas. There is no date mentioned in when they were created. So, and similarly, the Itihas and Puranas, they are ancillary study of the Vedas. They augment the study of the Vedas. Now, all these, the Puranas and the Itihasas, they strengthen the Vedas. So now, at some point in Kali Yuga, as Kali Yuga began, Vedamata was quite concerned that if only the Vedas existed, people may not understand the Vedas much. And therefore, Vedamata manifested in the form of Puranas and Itihasas. And if you want to know the exact meaning of the Vedas, you can read the Puranas. You can read the Itihasas. And when you study the Puranas and Itihasas together with the Vedas, they make a great study. They make a powerful study. So the number of Vedas and the number of verses in the Vedas is incountable, immeasurable. And therefore, the Vedas, the size of the Vedas is so huge. The Vedas are called Anadita Shastra. That means there are many sections of the Vedas that we have no access to at all. Human beings can't even access those sections of the Vedas. And therefore, the great rishis, the great acharyas, they wrote the same Vedas in the form of Puranas, Itihasas, so that common people like us can access it. Srimad Bhagavatam is a Puran, is called Amala Purana. And if you study the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is very different from studying the Vedas. 80 to 90% of Srimad Bhagavatam can be studied by any common man. Any common man can understand Srimad Bhagavatam if you just read them and study them. Why? Because it is written in the form of simple stories. Very little part of the Srimad Bhagavatam is complicated. Like as I told, I just spoke about three cantos. And even in those three cantos, there are only few chapters of those three cantos that are complicated purposely. But otherwise, it is pretty easy to read. So the Purana is called something very interesting. So the word Purana comes from Pura Api Nava Puranam. That means the Puranas present old facts in a new way. Puranas are old facts, they're old stories. But Navam means they present it in a new way. So when you read any of the Puranas, although they are quite old, they don't change, but they are still quite fresh. They give new ideas to us. Every single day, Pura Api Navam. Every single day when you read a Puran, when you read the Itihasas, when you read the scriptures, you will get newer ideas of applying the same old concepts. And that is why the Puranas don't innovate. You know, you will not find our Acharyas innovating. You know, it's not that they create new stories. It is not that they create new concepts. The same old concepts are there, but they adapt to today's circumstance. They adapt to today's application. They adapt to today's individuals and today's lifestyles. So, in the olden times, Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, and Dwapara Yuga, people were very different. And Kali Yuga, people are very different in terms of their ability, in terms of their capacity, in terms of their understanding. And therefore, innovation is very different from adaption. If you innovate, then it is not available to people before the innovation. That means, like, say, for example, if the Vedas were innovated, what is the meaning of innovated? What is the meaning of invention? Invention means before the invention, it doesn't exist. Right? Before I joined ISKCON, I used to be a patent attorney. And for filing a patent, one of the things that is compulsory to establish for any invention to be patentable, one is novelty. Novelty means you have to prove that this idea didn't exist in the past. That's the requirement for innovation. That's the requirement for an invention to be patentable. Now, the Puranas and the Itihasas, our scriptures, are not innovated. The Acharyas never innovated them. Nobody will say, before me, this didn't exist only. Nobody will say that. Because it always existed. Somebody compiled it. Vedavyas, he compiled all that knowledge together. It's not that he innovated it. Right? So, when anything further gets innovated, it becomes obsolete. Like say, for example, you develop a mobile phone. And let's look at, floppy disks. You know, at one point in time, we all used to use floppy disks, 1 MB, 2 MB floppy disks, you know. Now, it is kept in museums, right? And, you know, maybe 10 generations down the line, they will show in the museum, see, this is what people used to use. And everyone will laugh, you know, looking at the floppy disks. And then before the floppy disks, you know, I met His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj in Chicago. And he showed me huge disks, magnetic tapes, where the original soundtracks got recorded of, you know, this Govinda Madhipurusham that we play every day in the temple. The original soundtrack is called Radha Krishna temple album, you know. Radhanand Maharaj had that original soundtrack. And he showed me that thing. It was so huge, such a big, massive one. And to preserve it, there was a thick metal case, you know, to preserve it. Now imagine, you carry data in such a disk today. It's madness, isn't it? And it only, that entire such a massive thing carries only one album, four songs literally, you know. And today, one little pen drive, this small, it carries thousands and thousands of songs, isn't it? Now you don't even need a pen drive. Who uses pen drive nowadays? Everything is on cloud. I mean, how do you show anybody what's a cloud? So when anything gets innovated, the old thing becomes obsolete. The old thing becomes obsolete. You don't use it. So the Vedas and the Puranas, they don't innovate. If they innovated, that means something in the past would have become obsolete. But there is no innovation in our scriptures. Of course, there are nowadays many new modern authors who are innovating. And that's stupid to innovate. Because how can you innovate something that is eternal? You can't innovate it. And if you innovate it, what will happen is that till few years probably people will read your story. After that, people will throw it. Nobody will pass it down to generations, you know. It is not possible. And therefore, the Puranas, they adapt. They don't innovate. But how do they adapt? We'll give some very simple examples of how the Puranas adapt to today's context. The scriptures talk about the concept of sadhana, the concept of bhakti, and the concept of sadhana bhakti. Now, you'll find sadhana bhakti there all through the scriptures. In every single scripture, you'll find the concept of sadhana bhakti being there. But in Kali Yuga, if you study some of the acharyas that have been teaching bhakti, whether it is Tukaram Maharaj, or whether it is Ramanuja Acharya, or whether it is, you know, so many of the acharyas, like for example, Surdas, so many of these exalted personalities, you study Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writings, you study, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta's preachings, you study Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the way he taught. You study any of the acharyas and great personalities who lived in Kali Yuga and taught in Kali Yuga, you will find them emphasizing not exactly sadhana bhakti, but you will find them emphasizing sharanagati. Now, what is the difference between sadhana bhakti and sharanagati? Essentially, both are same in one sense, but the emphasis is different. I'll tell you why. In Satya, Treta and Dwapar Yugas, people were confident of their abilities. I can do bhakti by my effort. And people were serious about their sadhana. People were serious about the way they actually did their sadhana. But in Kali Yuga, people are not confident about their sadhana. You ask anyone who has been chanting 16 rounds of Hare Krishna Mantra, are you confident of it? I don't think anybody who is honest will say that I am confident about what sadhana I am doing, isn't it? So in this age of Kali, where people's abilities are so pathetic and so bad, the acharyas have adapted. And what have they adapted? The same teaching of sadhana bhakti. They are saying, sadhana bhakti today, I don't think you will survive it. I don't think you will manage it. Better do sharanagati. Take complete shelter of the Lord. And tell the Lord, my dear Lord, I am totally dependent on you. You only do whatever you want with me. And the Lord will actually take care of you. So if you study Tukaram Maharaj's bhajans, you study, you know, any of the great exalted poets, the last 500 years, you will find them very emphatic on the path of Sharanagati. It's not a change. It's not innovation. It's not that they have innovated something new. They have just adapted to today's circumstance, adapted to today's people, adapted to today's situation. Or for example, Sanskrit. The Vedas are written in Sanskrit, very complicated Sanskrit. Now you try to study that complicated Sanskrit today, impossible. Nobody will understand anything. Nobody will be able to study it nicely. Nobody will be able to understand it, digest it, what to speak of applying it. So the same Sanskrit, written in a common colloquial language, you know, whether you look at Kamba Muni who's writing Ramayana in Tamil, you know, poetry, or you look at Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami writing Bengali poems, you know, you look at Bhaktivinoda Thakur writing Bengali poems, or look at Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur writing English, you know, commentaries on different scriptures, look at Prabhupada writing, you know, in English, Or you look at some of, like, I was so fortunate to be in the association of Dravida Prabhu, one of Srila Prabhupada's disciples. I spent about 3 days with him at his house. I was fascinated by this person. What a person he is. Every single Sanskrit bhajan, every single Bengali bhajan, every single bhajan that we all the Vaishnava bhajans, he has translated all of them into simple English poems. And, you know, I was walking with him from where we were to the Mangalarti, into the temple across the street. And while we were walking, he was telling me, "You want to hear some poems?" I said, "Yeah, of course." And on my way, he was singing, you know, in English. He was singing beautifully all the bhajans that we sing in Sanskrit and Bengali, you know. I was fascinated. What a beautiful way of remembering things. So now for him, he was not so comfortable in singing in, you know, other language. So he felt, English is my mother tongue. I want to sing in this language. And he's singing. Now for him, absorption is so powerful. And I could see his face. I could see so much meaning in everything that he was saying. Now, this is not innovation. What is this? This is adapting. The same concept, but being adapted to a person and to be able to experience the same mood of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He wants to experience it. And he shares it with people that he comes across. And each and every one of them he shares it with, they just love it. And then he teaches them in the original language, you know. First he teaches them in English and then he teaches them in the original language. So then they kind of relate with it because they understand the meaning now. So, this is adaption. So the Vedas would have known that there won't be much people to study Sanskrit. And the inner meaning of the Vedas, it is better to concise them, adapt them in a way that common man can understand. And that is what the Acharyas do for us. That is what the Acharyas help us with. That is what the Acharyas are experts at. They are very experts at making this concept survive for centuries and centuries and centuries. Now you might wonder, how did our scriptures, which are so complicated and so old, survive for so many centuries, so many thousands of years? This is how they survived. The Acharyas have expertly adapted and expertly presented our scriptures in ways that are so relevant. Now, if Srila Prabhupada had not written in English, the Bhaktivedanta purports, how many of us would have read the whole Bhagavatam? Gita Press has all of it in Hindi. But how many people today can even read Hindi? You know? So, and what to speak of English? In every single language in the world, it's adapted now. Every single language in the world. You go and read, you will find Bhagavatam in Hebrew. You will find Bhagavatam in, you know, Chinese language. You will find Bhagavatam in Japanese language. You will find Bhagavatam in so many languages. Whichever language you can read, read it. The essence is the same. You will understand the same thing. So that is the difference between innovation and adapting. Now, I'm going to share with you all a very simple story. And this is a story from the Vishnu Puran. So Prabhupada in this particular purport quotes the Vishnu Puran. I'll just read the quote from Vishnu Puran here. He says, in the Vishnu Puran, it is said that fire expands its rays and heats up and heat from one place. Similarly, the Supreme Spirit, the Personality of Godhead, expands himself by his manifold energy everywhere and anywhere. This phenomenon manifestation of the gigantic universe is only a part of his Virat body. Now, the Puranas help us understand complicated subjects in simple language with the help of examples. And I just give you one example that the Purana just stated. This is from Vishnu Purana. I'm going to tell you another story from the Vishnu Puran, another concept from the Vishnu Puran that teaches us, that shows us how the Puranas teach us the same complicated phenomena in simple ways that you and me can understand. And of course, the story also teaches us the importance of a teacher to teach us this. So, we all have heard that we are spirit souls, we are not the physical bodies. We all have heard all these concepts in our life many, many times, in many ISKCON lectures, many books you would have read. You would have all heard many of these concepts. What are the concepts you're talking about? We are not the body, we are spirit soul is one concept. Or for example, here we're talking about God is everywhere is the second concept, you know. So these are simple concepts that we all know and we all have heard many times. The question this particular story in the Puran is asking is, you may have heard it, but have you learnt it? There's a big difference between hearing it and learning it. And let us look at this story and then see what the story is trying to teach us. And the most amazing thing is that, you know, as you read Srila Prabhupada's purports and, you know, books, hundreds of pages, thousands of pages, you'll find many things repeating. And many, many people feel that, you know, what is this? Prabhupada repeating same thing again and again. Why is he doing like this? This is the answer. This story is the answer to that question. And this story is the answer to the very thing that we need to keep reading and keep hearing the same basic things again and again till we learn them or till we actually apply them in our lives. So, the concept of permanence or eternity is taught by Krishna to Arjuna. The Atma is eternal, never changing, and the subject of the Atma is not a very easy subject to digest and easy subject to understand. It's a very complicated subject. So Krishna, he teaches the entire Bhagavad Gita, and he starts the Bhagavad Gita with this concept of we are not the spirit soul, we are not the physical body, we are spirit souls. So there was one teacher that he was teaching a student. So basically, what happens is when we learn from a teacher, like say for example, we hear a 100-hour course on Srimad Bhagavatam. Now after hearing a 100-hour course on Srimad Bhagavatam, how much you think you'll retain? Maybe 20. I mean, out of the 100 hours, how much you would have heard only? Maybe 15, 20 hours you would have heard, you know. And out of that, how much you will actually remember? Maybe 10% or 20% we will remember, isn't it? What happens to the other 80% which we don't remember? Is it gone waste? It's not a complete waste. It has just sunk into you, but you have not yet internalized. You are yet to internalize it, basically. That's the only difference. So there was this one acharya who was teaching this student. So this acharya, he was a great rishi, and his name was Ribhu. Ribhu was his name, and he had a student who was a very, very good student. You know, spent a lot of time with this teacher, learning, you know, all the basic scriptures and the basic knowledge, and this acharya, after teaching, you know, so much of the scriptures, he asked this his student. His student's name was Nabaga. So he told him. He asked him, you know, do you remember everything? Have you learned everything? Have you understood everything? And the student said yes. And at some point, the acharya felt that the student is qualified to now leave the ashram and start practicing on his own. So this student passed out, and he went and started living in his own house, in his own village, and he started practicing, you know, living a regular life. He got married, he had children, and life was passing quickly. So 1,000 years passed from the day when this disciple passed out from the ashram of this sage. Ribhu, this acharya, he felt, I should go and check how my disciple is faring, whether he has actually understood what I have taught him. So this Ribhu went to the house of Nidaga, this disciple. And he went disguised. Of course, 1,000 years had passed, so it is difficult to even recognize a person after 1,000 years, isn't it? Now you can't recognize nowadays after 30, 40 years also, people, you know, people change quite a bit. So after 1,000 years, the guru came to his house. And Nidaga had no idea who this person was. He thought he's a beggar, he's like a sannyasi wandering, you know. So he invited him to his house. And he told him, you know, he gave him the basic satkar that you do for a guest. And after giving him all the basic, you know, worship and the basic you know, courtesies, he asked him, will you please eat something? We want to offer you some meal. We have cooked and we want to offer you some meal. The guru, Ribhu, he said, I will not eat anything. I will only eat the best of best food. If you get me the rice made in ghee, and if you get me dal, which is very tasty, if you get me sweet rice, and if you get me savories, if you get me the best of best, only then I'll eat. Now you go to somebody's house, do you demand like this? So now this disciple, he was bewildered, you know, he didn't know why is this person asking like this. So he said, anyway, guest has come to my house, let me feed him, you know. So they said, please give us some time, we'll cook. So the wife of Ribhu, she went and cooked an elaborate feast, 10 items. And this person, you know, the guru, he ate all of it like anything. After eating the full meal, he washed his hands and, you know, feet, and then he came back. And Ribhu asked him, are you satisfied with the meal that you ate? Are you happy with the meal that you ate? This guru is Ribhu, his name is. The guru said, what meal are you talking about? What food are you talking about? I didn't eat anything. The disciple said, hey, I fed you so much. I only cooked and I fed you so much. You right in front of me ate so much. He said, I didn't eat. I never even looked at it. I don't have to be satisfied, I don't have to be happy because I don't have any needs only. Now this guy got really wild. He said, after eating so much, you're seeing like this, and he was wild on him. And then this person, the guru, he realized, my disciple has not understood that we are not the body, we are spirit soul. And the guru gave a full lecture on how the Atma has no pleasure, no pain. The Atma does not eat. The Atma doesn't die. The Atma cannot be, you know, touched. He gave full lecture again all over the whole concept of Atma. Then after that, this person realized, this is my guru only come back. And he fell at his feet, prostrated himself. And he said, I'm sorry, I forgot the main lesson that you taught me. Now I've understood nicely. Acharya went back. And he said, I'll come back again. 1,000 years later, he came back again. And this, you know, Nadaga, he was standing in a village procession where thousands of people were there, and a king on an elephant was passing by. And this guru came and stood next to him. And he asked this disciple, what are you doing? The disciple said, he didn't recognize the guru again, obviously. The disciple said, I am looking at the king sitting on the elephant, passing by, and I'm watching the whole procession. The guru very innocently asked him, who is the king? Who is the elephant? Who are all the passerbys? But, you know, Nadaga got very angry. He said, can't you see the king is sitting on the elephant? The one who is wearing so many jewels, he is the king. The, you know, the big black animal that he is sitting on is the elephant. And all these people that are standing over there are a common man. So this, you know, guru said, can you tell me the exact difference between a king and the elephant? And what is the exact difference between a king and a common man? This person got really angry. The disciple climbed on the shoulder of the guru. And he said, I am sitting on you, just like the king is sitting on the elephant, you know. You are like the elephant, I am like the king. And I am sitting on you, like that king is sitting on the elephant. And he was like, really, why did he lost it? And the guru realized, this fellow still not understood. And then he gave him full download. He said, what are you talking about? The elephant, the king, the passerbys, all of them are spirit souls. They're just the physical bodies that you're talking about. The body keeps changing. The soul never changes. There is nothing called black elephant and a jeweled king. There is nothing called poor passerbys. Everyone is same. The Atma is exactly the same. And he gave a whole lecture on the Atma. And the Guru told the disciple, I'll come back again. So Acharya is someone who teaches the disciple till he learns. And disciple is someone who needs to keep learning, keep learning, keep learning till he realizes what he has learned. So we all have education, we all have knowledge, but we don't have realization of that knowledge. So that is why we need acharyas who can help us not just learn, but internalize. Srila Prabhupada in all his books, he is not focused on giving us knowledge only, not just focused on giving us information. He wants us to internalize that knowledge. And therefore, I'll end with this. Srila Prabhupada, during one Radhashtami lecture, he was giving a Radhashtami lecture, you know, and he gave a 1 hour solid lecture on Radhashtami on how we are not the body, we are spirit soul. Now these disciples of Srila Prabhupada spent many years in ISKCON already. And at the end of the whole lecture, they went to Srila Prabhupada and told him, Prabhupada, can you tell us some Radha Krishna pastimes? And Prabhupada told them, first, you understand you are not the body or spirit soul properly. And then you become qualified to hear Radha Krishna pastimes. So till the time we are actually qualified to understand this basic concept, Prabhupada will keep hammering us. And the books of Srila Prabhupada will keep hammering us. And devotees who are, you know, trying to preach to us, trying to help us, all the great acharyas will keep hammering the same basic things into us. Why? Because we are very far from internalizing it. We have read it, but we have still not learnt it. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Grantha Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.